Hey, super grateful you're here this morning. And my name is Greg. I'm one of the pastors here. And if you're new to Fairhaven, we're a multi-site campus of Harbor churches. And we have five different campuses. There's this one here in Hudsonville. Then we have a bunch of them that are around this area. And we dream and pray and work toward planting more churches, because the more churches that are out there that have a heart for helping people find their way back to God, the more people meet up with Jesus. And our mission is that we simply want to help people find their way back to God, because there was a point when each one of us had an experience of Christ that changed our lives forever, and we long for that for everybody that we meet. This morning, we're in a series that we're calling Secret Lives, and I want to speak to those of us that have been victims of gossip and lies. To the victims of gossip and lies, knowing this, that those two words hold a lot of feeling, maybe a lot of pain, and the words I'm talking about are gossip and lies, hold a lot of pain, hold a lot of emotion for a lot of us around this room today. Maybe all of us have somewhere in our lives been impacted, have been touched by, or have felt the sting of gossip and lies. And I want you to know, if you're sitting here today, that you've been in an emotional whirlwind, that if something has hit you and you're saying, man, this is for me this morning, that if you're going to talk about gossip and lies and victims of it, that's me, and I'm feeling the sting of it right now. I want you to know that you're not alone. That I've spoken with just this week, I've spoken with four different people that fit that bill. One of them a teenager, the other three are adults. But to think that this is just a teenager or adult thing, that's not true either. Because we can think about children that are on the playground that have felt the sting of this kind of stuff. Like, what just happened? Why am I being maligned over here? And they might not use that word because they don't have that word, but they feel what we feel. It's a teenager that suddenly is like, I don't know what just went down here, because my whole peer group suddenly doesn't want to talk to me, doesn't want to be friends with me. And there's something spreading, and then they find out it's a lie. It's gossip. It's not true. Or they've been in a place as an adult, one of us as adult, or 10 of us as adults, or maybe a bunch of us have been in that place where we went, I'm out. You know, I've been in this job long enough. But the stuff that's being said about me isn't true about me. And it causes us to either want to leave, or in some cases we actually have to leave because of things that have been spoken, a gossip or a lie that is simply untrue about us. And to think that this started in our generation, oh, I would love that no other generation ever had to deal with it, and no other generation would ever have to deal with it. But to think that it started in our generation, that's just faulty, because it's been going on as long as human beings have been on planet Earth. The first whispers of lies into the ears of the first people. And I don't want to go back that far today, but I do want to back up quite a ways with you, a couple thousand years, and we'll find ourselves in the Bible together in a story that is about this guy named Paul. And Paul is a guy that met up with Jesus. And when we think about biblical characters, sometimes we can make the mistake of making them something other than human. Like, this guy wrote more books of the Bible than anybody. True story. That's true about Paul, but he's just a man. He's just a man that struggled, that had things said about him that were not true about who he was. And in this story, Paul was in a place where he was getting a beat down of massive proportions. The crowd, or a mob we really should call it, had full intention of killing him. That was their plan. And why, we might ask, are they doing this to Paul? Why do mobs do what they do? You know, somewhere we must ask that question too. Like, what is it about mobs that they do what they do? But in this case, they had a story they were believing about Paul. And the reason is because Paul was hanging out the entire day with a non-Jew. And some started spreading a story that because he was hanging out with a non-Jew, there's a high likelihood that he ended up in the temple with that non-Jew and, quote-unquote, he infected or defiled, made the temple unclean by bringing a non-Jew into the temple. Nobody had ever seen it. They had no surveillance cameras, right, that were saying, hey, we got you on tape. None of that. And all it took is the story starting to spread, and suddenly mob violence, they started beating him to the point that they were on their way to killing him when some of the Roman soldiers stepped in and stopped it. And they put Paul in chains. Started walking him off for further questioning. Paul at one point is like, man, come on. Time out. Can I address this crowd? Can I at least have my say on this? And the Roman soldier looked at him. And you wonder, is this stuff really in the Bible, what we're about to read? Like, really? And the Roman soldier said to him these words right here. Do you speak Greek? Will they even be able to understand you? Aren't you the Egyptian who started a revolt and led 4,000 terrorists out into the wilderness some time ago? Like, we can't make this stuff up. Like, really? Like, can you imagine Paul at that point going, what? What? Like, aren't I the leader of a terrorist group? Like, first they're accusing me of defiling the temple. They're beating me down for that. You put me in chains and are dragging me off. And where did you hear that? Like, who said that? Maybe somebody in the crowd's going, yeah, take him off. He led a terrorist attack. And 4,000, well, put him in chains. Aren't you the one? And Paul's like, no. No, I'm not the one. No, I didn't do that. Like, will somebody please check the facts? And then we back up the story some, and we can find this isn't the only case of wrong things being said about a person, things that weren't untrue being inflicted upon a person, and the real impact of that actually being that that person received some damage because of it, or at least words spoken in a way to damage a person. And the next one we're going to look at is actually not Paul, it's Jesus. And Jesus was in a place where gossip and lies all the time surrounded him. And there was this statement that was made about Jesus. Aren't we right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed? Like, no, you're not right in saying that. I grew up in Nazareth. I'm a Nazarene. That's my hometown. I'm Jesus of Nazareth. And as far as demon-possessed, no. The two things that I came to this earth for, number one, I came to seek and save that which is lost, to call children back to God, to help them find their way back to Him. And I also came, and these are one and the same, but I came to destroy the works of the devil. Those are the two things that I came to do. And so to call me a Samaritan or demon-possessed, like, no, no. That's not true about me. And where that statement comes from is a larger conversation that was happening between Jesus and some of the religious leaders of that day. And the conversation rolled out like this. They started it by saying, Abraham is our father, they answered. Well, if you were Abraham's children, Jesus said, then you would do what Abraham did. As it is, you are looking for a way to kill me. A man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the works of your own father. We are not illegitimate children, they protested. The only father we have is God himself. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me, for I have come here from God. I have not come on my own. God sent me. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is not truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Yet because I tell you the truth, you do not believe in me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Whoever belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God. The Jews answered him, aren't we right in saying you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed? No, you're not right. No, you're not right. Yeah, my name's Paul, but I did not lead a revolt of 4,000 terrorists. That's not me. No, that's not it. And yet he's still in chains. No, I'm not a Samaritan and I'm not demon-possessed. And yet they're still looking for some kind of way to undo Jesus. And this isn't the only time that Jesus was maligned. It's not the only time that he was gossiped about, that he was lied about. It's not the only time. In fact, here's another one, just one of many. But Jesus said this, to what can I compare this generation? They're like children sitting in the marketplaces and calling out to one another. We played the piper for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not mourn. For John, this is John the Baptist, came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, he has a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, here is a glutton and drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. It's like Jesus is saying, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It doesn't matter. Like John shows up, and John doesn't eat or drink. He eats locusts and honey, nothing else. And I show up and eat other and drink. And with John, this way, you're going to get called a man that's demon-possessed. Over here, you're going to get called a drunkard and a glutton. You just can't win. These lies are predominant. And we could say, okay, these are just words, like whatever. They're just words. Like words have no ability to do anything to you. And yet we would say, yeah, they do. Because Paul got a beat down. They're on their way to killing him. Obviously, they can do something. Lies can do something. They can stir something up. They can get you in chains, being questioned. Aren't you a leader of the terrorist group? Like, what? They can end up with you being on a cross in the person of Jesus Christ. So it's pretty clear that these external lies that are leveled at you have a real chance of doing damage to you. The external lies that are leveled at you have a real chance of doing real damage to you. Let's drag it into our modern era. Think about a man named Nelson Mandela, one of the most respected men of our generations. Mandela found himself in prison for doing the right things, found himself maligned for doing the right things, saw an injustice in his land and stood against it. And he did the best to work for basic human rights for people that were being abused in his nation and oppressed. And for it, he received an injustice. For it, they labeled him an insurrectionist. And in the 60s, they threw Nelson Mandela in prison for 27 years. This guy bounced from one prison to another prison to another prison. 27 years for doing the right stuff, for standing for the right stuff, and getting labeled a lie, labeled that he is an insurrectionist by those that were in power. Well, the day came when Mandela was eventually, even though he had a life sentence, times changed and the truth began to come out. And Mandela was released from prison and became the first democratically elected official in the nation of South Africa. He became their president. Imagine that. If you're on the other side of all the lies and the imprisonment. One third of Mandela's life spent in prison. This guy's out, and this guy's got power. Now what? Now what? Well, you can imagine the feelings, because you probably don't have to go that far. You can probably just tap into your own stuff and just go, I remember what it felt like to be lied about. I remember the rumors. I can feel the sting of it. And then multiply that by 27, one third of your life spent in prison. And the former president, Bill Clinton, he spoke to Mandela soon after his release, and he asked him about it, saying these words to Mandela. Surely, Clinton said, you must have felt some anger, maybe even great anger, toward those who imprisoned you. Mandela agreed and said, yes, yes. Alongside with this great sense of finally being free, yes, I felt some anger. But, he said, I valued my freedom more than my anger. And I knew if I maintained my anger, I would remain a prisoner. My anger would imprison me. The bitterness of it would imprison me. Now, what are we supposed to do with this residual anger? What did Mandela do with this residual anger? He chose to let it go. He had a position of power to do something other with a country that was divided, absolutely split into division. And instead of inflicting power upon them, he chose a different route, which I would say is the route of Christ. And we know the story because he became one of the most widely known, respected, and loved, admired leaders of the world. And you don't get to a place of admiration and love by the world, by abusing power. You get there by humility. You get there by grace. You get there by love. You get there by being a peacemaker. And Mandela won the Nobel Peace Prize, a sign of his work to work toward healing, both his own and for his nation, a man of incredible grace. What do we do when we're the victims of lies? When we're the victims of gossip, what are we to do with it? I would say we would do well to take a page out of the book, the playbook of Nelson Mandela, and to choose to not let that stuff, the residual anger that's there, to imprison us. I think we would do well to take a page out of the playbook of Jesus, who came to destroy the work of the enemy, who came to seek and save the lost, and as a result of that, has shown us how to live. And when we look at his life, not only did he not have to let go of anger, he never let it find a root in him. Bitterness never got inside of him to the place where it took up residence. How do we know that? Because the greatest display of his humanity, the greatest display of his grace, the greatest display of his love is on a cross. That while they were spitting on him, while they were beating him, as they were mocking him, as they were hurling insults his direction, as they were speaking untruths about the one whose name is truth and grace and love, as they were doing it, Jesus said, Father, forgive them. Even as they were doing it, he's like, this is not going to find a home in my heart. No way. Because I came to extend grace and mercy and love. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. We would do well to not let bitterness set up in our hearts. Mandela, Jesus, so many others have walked that road. And I want to ask us a question this morning. Because I think the greatest danger for us isn't just what can happen to us. It's what can happen in us. And when those two meet up, when something that's being said about you that isn't true about you meets up with something you have a suspicion that is actually a reality about you, those two can meet up to absolutely cripple us. What I'm talking about, it's this. It's the one who whispers. What's his name? The one who speaks lies over each one of us. The one who gossips and lies. The biggest liar any of us will ever know. Who is it? Like, who is it? From the foundation of the world, Jesus made it clear. From the foundation of the world, this one has been birthing lies. He's the father of every single lie that is out there whispering inside of you. It's true about you what they're saying. You're not enough. You're not smart enough. You're not bright enough. You're not cool enough to be in that group. Oh, I know that what they're saying isn't accurate, but I feel it over here. And so it's close enough because I'm feeling it on the inside. Who's whispering those lies to us? When I listened to Craig Avin, and Craig was one of our previous worship leaders, and he was here not long ago, and we're sitting in my house having a conversation. And then he shared a bit of it with us as a congregation, that he was sitting in his house believing, man, I don't know if I'm a good dad. I don't know if I'm good enough. I just don't know. It's the one thing I feel. And I'm like, are you kidding me? He talks about his children and prays for his children all the time. And he said, as I was beginning to feel that with my wife and with my children sitting there, I thought, man, if I'm feeling this, I wonder if my wife Tessa's feeling it. I wonder if my children are feeling it. And then he said, here's a lie that I've been believing about me, that I'm not good enough. I haven't loved you well enough. I'm not enough. And he said he watched as his children, one after another, began to cry and share what they were feeling. And beautiful little Rylan, 9 years old, says, I don't think I'm pretty. I'm like, are you kidding me? She's adorable. I don't think I'm pretty. And there's a piece of me, man, when I hear teenage girls beginning to compare themselves to the cover of a magazine that's been airbrushed, it's not even a real person, and they're trying to compare themselves to a model that isn't pretty enough that she has to be airbrushed. I just want to tell you, I want to hit a reset button on this world and say, what is that? That is a lie. And where is that lie coming from? Where is that lie coming from that tells a girl, I'm not pretty enough because I don't look like whatever, I don't look like a painting that's not real in itself? How much more if we were just to hear the truth from the one who says, my name is truth, my name is love, I'm the way, your way, I am truth, and I am love. And I think Rupi Kaur captured this so beautifully. It just stands in stark contrast to the lie of the enemy about these bodies that are women. She wrote these words. When my mother was pregnant with her second child, I was 4, maybe 5. I pointed at her swollen belly in confusion at how my mother had gotten so big in such a little time. My father scooped me in his tree trunk arms and said, the closest thing to God, honey, on this earth is a woman's body, where life comes from. Oh, to have a grown man tell me something so powerful at such a young age changed me to see the entire universe rested at my mother's feet. Ah, that is magnificent. You can't airbrush that. You can't paint something that beautiful. This is who God created women to be. And that's just one example of those lies that get echoed inside of us. I can tell you straight up, I just want to join God today. Join Christ, because he said, I came to seek and save that which is lost. I came to destroy the work of the enemy. And then he says, the Father sent me, so I'm sending you. So I'm on mission here today to destroy any lie of the devil, the father of lies, that has found root inside of you today. And I want you to know that there is no, not enoughs that's inside of us that has been whispered to us. You're not pretty enough. You're not good enough. You're not worthy of enough. You're not an object of love. How could you be? All of those, every single one of those comes from the devil. They never, ever come from God. And I just got to ask us why. Me too here. Why would we listen to a liar? Why? Why would we listen to a liar? I want to repeat something that I said earlier, because I believe it to be true, that those external lies that are leveled at you have a real chance of doing damage to you. And I want to add this, but that does not mean they will do real damage in you. Those are different. They may do damage to you. Yeah, it got Mandela imprisoned. Yep. It gets people stuck outside of their peer groups. Yep. It got Paul a beat down. Yeah. It got Jesus put on a cross. And yes, it can cause all kinds of stuff to us. But that doesn't mean it has to find a home inside of us. It doesn't mean it has to take up root in us. If we can just let the truth of God soak over us, and we can expose every one of those lies, declare war on those lies that are inside of us, those words will feel very different coming at us. I thought about, man, if somebody were to say to me, Greg, I think your marriage is horrible, I'd be like, actually, that doesn't find a home in me because I love my wife dearly. My wife loves me dearly. That's a lie that I'm not letting find root. And that one on the outside, you could spread a rumor about that, but it isn't going to find a home because that lie has not been owned on the inside. Let's declare a war on the lies that are inside of us and stop listening to the enemy. And it was well over a decade ago now. I was here, actually down here, and I wasn't a pastor here at that time, and yet I was invited to come preach, and the reason for that invitation is that it was the service of my mother. She had passed away from a long battle from cancer, and my dad was sitting right here, my grandpa, my grandma, my mom's mom and dad are sitting there, and I had the high honor. It was one of the most difficult sermons I'd ever preached, and it was one of the most beautiful for me because I got to talk about my mom. And I got to talk about Jesus and their love for one another. And then on the heels of that service, I received a card from somebody that I treasure very much. And it's maybe my most treasured card of my lifetime that I've ever received. And it came from Joe Strading, a member of this church. And at one point in the card, she said, I'm writing no longer as I normally do. I have a sense I'm writing in the Spirit, meaning that God is now speaking through me. And she cautioned it and said, I have a sense that he's speaking these words over you, that Jesus had his arm around your mother and opened up a window into this earth at the moment that you were preaching, Greg. And said, Sharon, as part of your reward, see how much he loves us. Ugh. And for years, I would tell that story, and I could barely get through it without crying. Today, I'm able to get through it without crying, but it still means much to me to think about that. I was in a worship service, and the man that was up front said, I'm going to pray, but I have a sense that God actually wants to speak over you, and so I'm just going to allow him to speak over you. Let's close our eyes, he said, and we did. And he began to pray as if these words were coming from God himself. And I'm telling you, it was so powerful for me. And this week, for those of you who have been around here, week in, week out, for 6 years, you know I've never done this, but this week I was thinking about this moment, thinking about the lies, and so want them gone out of your life. Just want them gone. I do not at all like the work of the enemy, and I love the work of God to heal and to restore. And I had a sense that God wanted to speak some things over you, and so I was alone and just started writing them down. And I want to invite us to close our eyes, and we're going to pray together, and I'm going to pray as if these are God's words. I believe they are spoken over us. Let's pray together. I am the Alpha, and I am the Omega. I am the beginning, and I am the end. I was before all things, and am before all things. I am after all things, and am the one who is after all things. I am the first word and the last. I am your first word, and I have the last word in you. I made you. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. You are beautiful. I made you that way. You are the object of my love. I saw you before the foundation of this world. I delighted in you, and I delight in you, and I will always delight in you. I chose you. Out of all the people in this world, I choose you. I call you by name. You are my child. You are my friend. You are an important part of my royal family. You are an integral part of my plan to reach the world with the beautiful news of Jesus. My mercy, it renews every morning. It's who I am. From my seat of mercy and from my heart of grace and love for you, I participate in a beautiful dance of grace day after day after day. I wash you in forgiveness. I shower you with grace. I lavish you with love. I listen to your cries. I know your pain. I'm familiar with it day in, day out. I know where you hide. I see it. I understand the lies that have been spoken over you. I have come to eradicate them. I ache over every lie that you have bought, that you have owned, that you believe to be true about you. I shatter those now. I come as your Redeemer. I come as your Savior. I come as your healer. I see you inside and out, and there is nothing about you that I cannot heal. There is nothing about you I cannot restore. There is nothing about you I cannot bless. There is nothing about you that I cannot make new. For I am the God of all things new. I'm the God who birthed you, who redeemed you, who called you by name. You are deeply, deeply loved. Amen.